Hey yo, hey yo, this is Royce ISAACS, Team Filthy representer, one half of the West Coast Wrecking Crew. And all I'm saying is listen to that wrestle and keep it motherfucking filthy.
Hello, and welcome back to Total Nonstop Talking, the podcast where we only talk about TNA. I'm Fusa, and once again, this month, I am joined by Casey and Steve. And let's just jump right into it, because it's been a very busy month. Scratch that, actually. It's been a very busy 2 weeks for TNA, as they had No Surrender, followed by Sacrifice just 2 weeks after that. So I think it's fair that we just jump straight into a quick No Surrender review. Very 50-50 card. Some matches worth a damn, other matches not really. But the first one that's more important than anything was Eric Young versus Frankie Kazarian. The winner of this match gained a TNA world title shot at Sacrifice just a couple weeks following. This match was actually like pretty solid. Two veterans, of course, of the ring just going at it. Wasn't anything super special, wasn't garbage though, so very just average, solid match that saw Eric Young winning and getting that title shot against the winner of this main event at Sacrifice. Any thoughts from either of you on this opening contest?
Well, first of all, you've got Frankie Kazarian's name wrong. He's the king of TNA. So that's the new label he's going by. I sort of quite like the character. There's sort of a interesting angle on the back of this. A sort of suspension angle, so that was quite good. But yeah, the match, as you say, was two veterans putting on a good match, but, you know, nothing outstanding, but very solid and very enjoyable.
I was like, we haven't really talked about like Frankie's heel run like so far, which happened like right after Hard to Kill. But so far, this hasn't really like moved me that much. To me, I find it like really bizarre that they had Frankie turn heel, and everything he done so far, it's been all right, but. To me, if like the end goal is him to be world champion, I'm not really sure like how this hero run is like gonna really like achieve that goal.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird booking so far of his heel turn. It's like turned heel, cut promo, brought back Big Damo to fight Eric Young, had match, lost match, beat up ref, suspended. And then hadn't been seen on TV again until Sacrifice, which we will get to. It's just kind of been like a weird, like, oh yeah, right, hi Frankie, you were, yeah, you're heel. But yeah, that was one thing I didn't mention. After Kazarian lost the match, he just got really mad and just beat the shit out of the referee, which resulted in him being suspended. In kayfabe, not actually suspended, because, well. But yeah, Eric Young won. Number one contender for the world title going into Sacrifice. But the next contest is actually a match properly worth talking about. The third match in the best of three series between ABC and GYV for the TNA World Tag Titles.
Yeah, this was a great match, wasn't it, in terms of, you know, you knew this was going to be a good best of three series. You knew it was going to go to one all and there'd be a deciding match. It sort of ebbed and flowed. There were lots of times I thought GYV might take the titles, but yeah, very enjoyable sort of finish in terms of, you know, there was a scarf involved, you know, Gibson's famous Liverpool scarf. And a double team maneuver before Ace Austin gets the pinfall over Zach Gibson.
Yeah, the whole series was like really enjoyable to watch. Like how each match like escalated from before, and the final match had callbacks from like the previous two matches. Like a really great series. If like any of our listeners haven't watched any of the matches, I say go watch all of them because they're all great.
Yeah, for sure. All three of them were very good. A lot of like solid story with this match or with this series as well. GYV just constantly cheating. First, they used the scarf in the first match, and then before the second match, they attacked Ace Austin's arm, which resulted in, well, them not winning that second match because we did go to a third. And yeah, in this third match, though, it was a bit, because of course it was like a PLE event, they did show out a little bit more compared to the previous two matches. A lot of like great wrestling. In the end, though, it was the titles were retained by ABC. This time, Ace Austin actually using the scarf on James Drake instead of GYV using the scarf to help get the win.
Yeah, one bit I do remember was there was a great sort of doomsday device type maneuver on the outside that the GYV did.
Oh, yeah.
Which looked very, very painful.
Yeah, there was like another spot where I believe James Drake did like a coast-to-coast onto like Chris Bay, and that led to like a really great near fall, because that was a really nice maneuver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of great spots in this match. Very much worth watching the entire Best of Three series if you hadn't seen it. But yeah, no, great stuff. We're going to skip a little bit through the card just because, you know, it's a lot of talking, a lot of wrestling to talk about. Kind of just cover the more important stuff. The following match, PCO Khan, that had a very short match, just ended with a bunch of like beating each other up. But following that match was the Knockouts World Tag Title match, which was a rematch from Hard to Kill, which saw Decay defend the titles against MK Ultra, which saw the titles go back to MK Ultra.
Very, very confusing. I was like trying to rationalize it in my head, thinking like, okay, well, Killer Kelly and Masha are like the more popular Knockouts they have. So I was like, okay, let's keep them dominant and get the belts back onto them. Because like originally I thought it's like they gave the tag titles to like Decay originally because, well, Decay officially is back. They haven't been on TV for a while. Let's give them the tag titles and to like jumpstart some stuff for them later. And then later on TV comes around, Decay weren't really featured that much. And I guess creators realize, huh, we didn't really think this through. Let's give the belts back to MK Ultra. But then what happened at Sacrifice like ruined my thinking as well. So I was like, this is just all very confusing.
Yeah.
Becoming like a 24/7 title, isn't it? Changing hands every time you see them.
Anytime the belt's on TV, it's just like, oh, hey, that's a new champion. Someone else is holding him this time. That's weird. But yeah, you kind of alluded to the results and our result on Sacrifice, which we'll get around to. I have a little bit of a rant about it when we get to that. But following the match, MK Ultra just started to beat up Decay until Jody Threat and Danny Luna came and made the save. Which, the build-up to this tag title match was Danny Luna and Jody Threat versus MK Ultra, with Decay cutting like one pre-taped promo. Like,
yeah, that's what I was like saying earlier. It made, like, the booking made me really think, like, they just like gave the titles to Decay just so they can force themselves to do stuff later. Then they realized like we really got nothing for them. So like I'm not sure like what the thinking is here.
Yeah. It's a weird like we're in like a weird limbo position right now, because we probably should mention this at the top of like the review. This was the actual like first proper non-Scott D'Amore show. Everything up until this point had Scott D'Amore's fingerprints on it. This was the first show that, like, he was not there for booking, because up until this point, everything else was, like, pre-taped and stuff, so, like, he had booked it. But this was the first one where it was, like, the actual, like, Anthem booking it instead of Scott. So some of the results, and also results at Sacrifice, were definitely, you could see some of the influenced by Anthem. But moving on into the next match, which saw Josh Alexander versus Simon Gotch. This match was fine. It was kind of like what you'd expect. Gotch was fine. Alexander was fine because Goff was fine. Alexander won the match. Not too much to talk about unless either you guys have anything.
No, it just seems like it's a very short run for Simon Gotch because he's, I assume he's not coming back. I haven't seen him on TV since. And
No. I guess like the only thing I really said is like, if this is like your first time like watching Simon Gotch since he got released by WWE, it was like a good showing for him. But like, other than that, like, yeah, nothing more to really say about the match.
Yeah. Like it's, which is interesting because they had this with this match, there's this big build because, like the last time these two met, it was in like, what was it? I want to say it's Beyond Wrestling. I don't think that might not be correct, but it was an indie show. But like the match was between Alexander and Gotch, and it was such a good match that after the match, Scott D'Amore gave Josh Alexander a contract to TNA. So that was the big storyline of this, was like that Simon Gotch was saying that he was left kind of in the dust and like left in the background of Josh Alexander. Because like, oh, like we talk about like this was the match that Josh Alexander got his TNA contract, but we never talk about the guy that was across the ring from him, which was me, kind of thing. And then this match happened, it was fine, and then we just haven't heard from Gotch since.
Yeah, it was probably, maybe like this feud was probably going to have Scott D'Amore more involved, but we know what happened with Scott. And yeah, because like I believe in like the backstage interview Gotch had with Allen Angels, Gotch like referenced like in that like indie match how Scott was like on commentary, he was hyping up Alexander, but like Scott didn't really say anything about Gotch, so maybe Scott D'Amore was gonna have like be a bit more involved in this feud, but since we know like what happened with Scott, I guess like they decided to like scrap the feud.
Yeah, which is really unfortunate.
Yeah, we haven't talked about Alexander's extension that's been, it sounds like, imposed on him in terms of, obviously he clearly signed a contract originally to allow it, but yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what the TNA do with Josh Alexander now Scott D'Amore's not there, and now he's sort of implied that this will be the last year of his contract in TNA.
Yeah, that actually, like, speaking of his contract, they extended him, but like he didn't agree to it. It was like the, like, you know, like how sports have like player options and stuff, or like with the NFL they have franchise tagging. He basically got franchise tagged. Like this is like, yeah, TNA like has, it wasn't like a thing where they said like Josh Alexander signed with the company. It was just like a, yeah, TNA has invoked their rights to extend Josh Alexander for one more year. And then Alexander came out and was like, whoa, I didn't like, you know, agree to this. This is kind of just like, you know, you gave it to me. So not the greatest look for Anthem to just kind of be like, hey, you're going to work here for another year. So, yeah. You know, add to the pile of terrible, not great things that Anthem has done for TNA.
Yeah, it's like a really rough start for Anthem. They got like a lot of work for like the next year to show, like, I guess all talent that it's like worth to like stay within the company. But I guess we'll just see what happens the rest of the year.
Yeah, yeah. I think Steve Macklin's the next big contract that's up, isn't it? So I think his contract's up in the next few weeks. So that'll be an interesting one.
In a few weeks? Oh man, I didn't realize it was that close. I thought,
yeah,
I thought it was like a kind of like end of year kind of deal with him.
Wow. No, I think it's, I've got a feeling it's sort of May from memory.
But moving on, we're going to just step into the TNA World title match. This was contested under No Surrender Rules, the first No Surrender Rules of its kind. It was good. I thought it was a really good match. A lot of good spots of like, you're like watching and you're like, oh God, like, are they going to throw in the towel for this? Kind of things. Like there was I think it was Shelly or Moose's fingers, one of them, I think it was Moose, that Shelly put like Moose's fingers in like the turnbuckle bolt, and was like yanking back on them, trying to get like the system thrown in the towel. Never did. A lot of just like different like spots like that where you're just like, oh shit, like they're gonna like do something about the towels. And then there was, it kind of got a bit ridiculous at the end where just like both the system and the jet setters were like jumping in the ring and stuff, kind of like stop each other for interfering, and the only one left standing at the end of it was Kushida. So Moose speared Shelly twice, grabbed like a steel chain, wrapped it around Shelly's body, or wrapped around his body, and then was going to spear Shelly, and then that's when Kushida threw in the towel. Which, like, sure, I guess. I don't know. I felt like a bit of a weaker finish. I felt like you could have like had a better spot for that. Like, yeah. You definitely could have done like a bigger kind of like, you know, it looks like he's gonna break like Shelly's arm or something kind of thing with the chain, or like he's like using it like to choke him out or something. But it's kind of just like, yeah, like you throw in the towel or else I'm just gonna spear him with this chain around my shoulder, so it's gonna hurt a little more. And then Kushida threw in the towel, and then Moose did it anyway, which heel 101. Like, that's kind of like a, like, you know, that's gonna happen regardless. But yeah, Moose does come out with the title retention. Any further thoughts on this match?
Yeah, for me, I enjoyed it more than the match at Hard to Kill. I think the sort of throwing in the towel added that extra sort of tension. You sort of sensed it was going to go that way with obviously Moose retaining because he's recently become champion. And you just sensed it was going to lead to tension between Shelly and Kushida, or whoever threw the towel in, and that's sort of how it's played out. So it's interesting to see where that leads to. But yeah, I enjoyed this match.
Yeah, I thought the match was good. I like the no surrender rules stipulation, but I really think the stipulation didn't really like fit the feud Shelly and Moose had. I think like they could have just had like our regular match and have like the same type of finish, and it was still like have the same effect it was going for. I was like, I do like the concept of the no surrender rules, and I hope they do like bring it back, and like instead of just like a championship rematch, they actually have the rules attached to like a blood feud.
Yeah. It was definitely like a good stipulation. It's just kind of like a thing where like this match specifically didn't feel like it was worthy of it. But yeah, no, definitely good, very solid stipulation. It worked better in the future. And I don't know, I think the finish was a bit weak, and it might just be because I'm more used to other wrestling having these kinds of like, you know, submission matches or I quit matches or stuff being like proper, like, oh no, like this is gonna end really, really badly kind of finishes. With this, is kind of like, this is just gonna hurt a little more than a normal spear. But yeah, it's just Moose retains and will face Eric Young at Sacrifice for the world title. Coming up after that was the Knockouts world title match, which saw Jordynne Grace defending against Giselle Shaw, who won the Ultimate X at Hard to Kill for this opportunity. But before the match gets started, Ash by Elegance sits ringside to get a bit of a closer look at the match. How do we feel about Ash by Elegance?
I have to say, I do like George Iceman. I know I shouldn't, but he's actually really good in the role, I think. But as far as Ash herself, I just think she lacks a bit of charisma, and she lacks a bit of, well, certainly in ring she lacks, compared to some of the previous challenges I've had for Jordynne Grace's title.
Yeah, like I was gonna like say the same thing. I feel like I enjoy watching George Iceman more than watching Ash. It's like so far it's been okay, but we haven't really like seen anything of substance from Ash yet, because like so far she's only been like facing like enhancement talent. So hopefully we see something more memorable from her. Hopefully before, well, like I'm just guessing, she's facing Grace at Rebellion, but
yeah, I agree with both of you. Ash herself is kind of whatever. It's very much like she's just has shown up a couple times, had a couple squash matches, and is just kind of there, and Matthew Raywell is just all over her on commentary. And it's like, sure, this is good, but like I'm seeing a better version of this on AEW with Nigel and Mariah May.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
There's a much, this is kind of like a much like a worser version of that kind of connection. But with this match was actually pretty solid. Some good spots, like Jordan going for like the juggernaut driver on the apron, and then Giselle countering it into a standing Spanish fly off the apron to the floor. That was a very great spot. But unfortunately, without Giselle's, you know, entourage, she's not in like that same kind of like easier to win mindset, but more like setup with like not being able to have interference or anything. It's kind of just like an actual one-on-one match, and like it's kind of like something that she's not really super used to, just because she's always had like Savannah Evans or the other guy I'm blanking on the name of with her.
Jay Vidal.
Jay Vidal. She fired both of them very recently, so she's kind of went into this match on her own. So it was kind of just like she was more not used to being there. But following the match, Ash left with her personal concierge, which my response was okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, you guys have any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think Giselle put in a good performance. Certainly one of her best matches, I think. Jordan's obviously fantastic. I can see Giselle at some point getting another opportunity at the title. But yeah, for the moment, clearly Jordan is set for a long run, I think.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm getting to out of this. Casey?
Yeah, I don't really got like much more to say. I guess like right now, at least for the knockouts division, having like all these knockouts facing Jordan right now can be like a good like testing of the waters to see who they can like lean upon later down the line. But yeah, good match.
But moving on into the main event, which saw Chris Sabin defend the X Division title against the debuting Mustafa Ali. This was the first time that the X Division title has main evented a pay-per-view since that match between Joe Sabin and Joe Daniels and Styles back in 2005. But yeah, this was also another good match. Another one I enjoyed. Ali was very good with Sabin, and vice versa. A lot of good like submission work from Ali, a lot of good like, you know, like cruiserweight work as well from Ali. Both guys showing off great stuff. Sabin hit a clothesline from hell, Michigan, and then followed with a cradle shock combo. Didn't win the match there. He went for a top rope cradle shock. Ali countered into a sunset flip, then hit 450, and became the new X Division champion. His first match in TNA, he is a champion. How do we feel about the match, and what are our thoughts on Ali winning the title on his first night in the company?
Yeah, I like the build-up to it, to be honest. I think it was really good, because obviously Ali's character was sort of positioned as a heel, but the way Sabin was acting also made him sort of the heel, and clearly on the day, I think the crowd were hoping for a title change. And, you know, the match itself was really good. And I think clearly it shows that Ali's invested into staying with TNA for a period of time. And that's only a good thing, I think.
Yeah, yep. For sure. Casey?
Yeah, I was like a bit hesitant of like letting Ali being champion, but when he came out and like hearing the response from the crowd and how behind they were Ali, I was like perfectly fine with him being champion. There's like a bit in a match that kind of like bothered me. It's just like a random thing. There's a spot where Saban knocked Ali out of the ring, and then Ali had like his personal security with him, and they were like helping Ali back up. Saban did a crossbody dive from the top row onto the bodyguards. Ali was able to escape from it, and then like a little bit later, the Good Hands came down and tried to like interfere in the match, but Saban was able to like dispatch them. They didn't really like play too much into like the final result, but I find it like really odd. I was like, okay, so why does Ali have personal security and the Good Hands? I feel like he doesn't need like both. He needs like only one of them.
Yeah, I think the situation with that was that like the personal security is the personal security, but then the Good Hands are like followers of his, kind of just, like, you know, like yeah, like I'll vote for you, Ali, and Ali we trust kind of thing. Like they're not actually like paid by Ali, they're just kind of there because they like Ali. But yeah, it is a bit of a confusing having two different setups of backup with the security and then the Good Hands. Steve, you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's interesting having the Good Hands there as a sort of trying to get a rub off being close to Ali. I think in terms of the sense, you know, clearly they're not a threat in the tag team division, but perhaps with Ali guiding them, they can improve their status. But yeah, I think the security are just going to be there ongoing just to, you know, cause interference, but not actually be named people. They're just going to be back up, and so it's interesting to see how that's going to go in terms of where the storyline develops, especially with what happened to the Good Hands in the lead up to Sacrifice.
Which we will get to in just a bit here, as we are about to flip over to Sacrifice. But that was No Surrender. Was there any overall thoughts on the show?
I didn't like it as much as Hard to Kill, but then I guess that it's not as big an event as Hard to Kill, but yeah, it's one of the weaker shows, I think, in recent months.
That's fair. But a couple weeks, just 2 weeks even, right after this show happened, was TNA Sacrifice. Very first match on the card. Finally, we see Nick Nemeth versus Steve Macklin. Or at least we would have seen Nick Nemeth versus Steve Macklin if TNA's feed was working. About halfway into the match, their service just completely shit itself, both on Fight and TNA Plus. It was just not having a good time. There was like, it would freeze, the connection would drop, the picture would be just super, super pixelated, like to the point that it was blurry. Audio dropouts, audio desyncing. It was just a whole lot of like technical issues. Went through the first like couple of matches. Apparently they said that the VOD was fixed to this, so if you are to go back and watch it, you can, and it should be fine.
Yeah, I didn't watch it live, but I did read about the problems, and when I watched it, it was all fine. So I watched it a day or two later, and they'd fixed it by then, so I didn't even notice any of these problems when I watched the match on the TNA app.
All right, cool. There you go. So if you want to go back and watch this match, which I do recommend, the match works. The match is watchable on replay, but as of like the show itself, it was just not it. So it was good, and then all these technical issues happened, and then Nemeth won because it was kind of like, I couldn't really tell what was happening, but according to the site, he won with a pair of super kicks, and then he followed up with Danger Zone, which is what he's calling the zigzag now.
I would go back and watch it because for me, this was the best match of the show.
Yeah.
Which I know is quite a bold statement in the sense we've got a couple of other great matches coming up, but that for me was a fantastic match, and Macklin just continues to impress me each time I see him.
Yeah, for sure. This was definitely a match of the night, regardless of the issues. But there was one spot which had Nemeth in a tree of woe, and then Steve Macklin went like for a spear, but like Nemeth pulled himself up in time and Macklin flew through like between the top and middle turnbuckle and not into the ring post, but past the ring post and like flew out of the ring into the commentator, or not the commentator, the timekeeper area. Insane spot. Problem is, though, it was such an insane spot that that's what caused the issues. The match was fine up until that spot, and then at that spot, that's when just the audio and video issues just started happening. But yeah, it was good. But unfortunately, those issues carried through into our second match, which saw ABC defending the TNA Tag Titles against the System.
Yeah, fine match. But I know, Fusa, you didn't really like the result that much, but it's like, when I saw this match was announced, I knew how this match was going to end. And I believe this was, like, a good decision.
Yeah. I'm gonna say the same kind of rant I had on Pure Vision Chase Owens and Kenta won the IWGP tag titles, which is, why are Brian Myers and Eddie Edwards tag team champions in 2024? Just why? Like, it's like I get it, like all the gold moment for the faction kind of shit, but like, it's no, they're not. Brian Myers has never really been a great wrestler. Eddie Edwards is way out of his prime. Like, no, keep it on ABC. ABC's the better tag team. They have the better matches. No, we didn't need this. Stop. Just stop.
Yeah. But you knew it was going to happen when they got the title shot, didn't you?
Yeah.
AC said, you know, it was clearly going to be, you know, them number one contenders getting the title shot, them having all the gold. I did actually like the segment they'd done on this week's show where they sort of had this video and they replayed across the bottom on a ticker's feed all their achievements, which I thought was quite impressive, and did enjoy that bit. But yeah, you can see that this is going to be a few month run for, I think, for all the System with the gold.
I haven't actually watched Impact this week yet, but I'm assuming the ticker said Eddie Edwards' achievements of like world champion, former tag,
yeah, two-time world tag champion, team champion, yeah,
Ring and of like Honor, GHC, I wish,
yeah, first Fort Western to hold the GHC championship,
and then it got to Brian Myers, and Brian Myers has said works here.
I mean, no, he said he's wrestled in front of 80,000 people at WrestleMania. He's got a podcast. And Moose was just, he worked with Bill Belichick, Tom Brady. You
know. Yeah, they might as well have just put some works here. Yeah. That's like, congrats, you did these accolades outside of the company. But as for here, you just champion. Work here.
Digital media champion, don't forget.
Yeah, because that title has a lot of weight to it. There's so much prestige in the Digital Media Championship. Man, I wonder what happened on the pre-show. Oh, Crazy Steve defended it against Joe Hendry, and AJ Francis was on commentary. No thanks.
Yeah, but that's the way it was going to go, isn't it? As soon as we saw AJ Francis, he knew he was going to interfere, and I think it was meant to be Laredo Kid against Crazy Steve, but they announced.
I think he was part of a lot of visa issues. I know that like there's a thing where like a good chunk of the CMLL roster is having ongoing visa issues, so there hasn't been as much CMLL on AEW TV as Tony Khan would like, and I think it's kind of the same situation here with TNA with like the AAA partnership. Where it's kind of, I think it's the same thing where like they're also having visa issues. So because of that, there hasn't been like as much AAA talent as TNA would like there to be. Edwards and Myers are tag team champions, which sure, I guess.
Following that.
Oh, sorry. Yeah,
my bad. Yeah, I was just gonna say like that. Like it'll be fine. I still think like both Myers and Edwards aren't like at their peak, but I still think they're good enough to have decent matches. And whoever takes the belts off of them, we'll help them out when that happens.
Yeah, it's going to be definitely one of those reigns where the champs are going to be carried, and it's going to be very obvious. Moving on, next match was PCO versus Khan again in a no DQ match. This match was fine. Not much to talk about.
PCO won. But I talked about this last month. I was dreading this match, or the match at No Surrender, and that was a bit of a nothing match. But this match actually surpassed my expectations, excepting they were very, very low in the first place. But I actually didn't mind this match.
Yeah, when your expectations are in the floor, it's not hard to exceed them. But yeah, it was not terrible. There was kind of like the very, like, you know, obvious, like, piece, like something happens to PCO, and then PCO gets up and commentary goes, yep. What? How did PCO do that? PCO's not human. And it's like, yeah, you know.
Yeah, the Undertaker spot, yeah.
Match ended with PCO driving Khan into a pile of chairs and then hit the PCO salt. Fine match. Better than their No Surrender match, because it was, you know, weapons could be used. And weapons always makes things better. Following that match, though, was MK Ultra defending the Naka tag titles against Luna.
That's the fire.
Danny Luna and Jody Threat. That's their names. I nearly said Luna Threat. This match was about the same with the No Surrender match. Like, pretty short. Ended suddenly. Threat won via roll up on Killer Kelly to win the titles. So we have new Knockouts tag team champions, and just like, why stop?
It's just like a big like question mark over this division. I guess I'm trying to look at this possibly that like one of the biggest issues with the Knockouts tag division is like for the longest time there wasn't really that much variety when it came to like teams. Maybe the changing of the titles in the past couple weeks, what is their attempt to actually make a division around it? But still, this is all confusing.
Yeah, it's very like you said, they didn't have much variety with this division, but now it's like they have too much variety. So they're like, look at our division. Hey, we have this tag team. Let's put the titles on this tag team. Look at our division. Look at that tag team.
Yeah, I think the problem for me is I'm not sure why Danny Luna and Jody Threat are teaming together. There's no sort of obvious story around. They just seem to be put together, have a couple of matches, and then win the titles. And aside from the fact they've got coloured hair, I don't quite know what brings them together to form a team. At least with MK Ultra, you can see that they're both sort of hard-hitting style, and, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that tension between them gets on. But yeah, I just don't see the connection between Luna and Threat at the moment.
My understanding of the connection is, hey, you lost to an MK Ultra member. I lost to an MK Ultra member. Let's team up and lose together. Oh, we won. That's kind of the connection, is that they both like had lost singles matches to either Masha or Kelly. So they're kind of just like banded together, and now they're tag champions. I don't know. It's a lot of hot potato with this title, which like you don't have to have hot potato with the title. I like Jody Threat. I've seen Jody Threat wrestle live. She's cool. I like Danny Luna. Danny Luna's cool. They're a cool tag team. But it's like the titles just switch. Like it went from like the titles changed hands in January, and then the titles changed hands 2 weeks before this match, and now the titles changed hands again. And how this is going, the titles are probably going to change hands again at Rebellion, which it's like, I don't know. Any further thoughts on this match, or are we cool to head to the next one?
Yeah, we can just go ahead.
Let's head on, yeah.
All right. The next match, Josh Alexander versus Hammerstone 2. The day that they had announced this match, which was, I think, like the Impact prior to to like sacrifice, they had announced that Hammerstone has signed with the company. Hooray! More signings. More great signings.
And telegraphing the result of the match. Yeah.
They also got rid of his first name, so he's no longer Alexander Hammerstone. He's just Hammerstone. I don't know if this was a thing because of Josh Alexander having the last name of Alexander, or if they didn't want Alexander Hamilton jokes or something. I don't know. They just got rid of his first name. Yeah, that's a thing they did. Anyway, match was good. In my opinion, it was a bit better than their match at Hard to Kill. I've noticed that's kind of a recurring trend this year where the rematch will be better than the original match. I'm going to throw it to one of you guys really quick for your thoughts.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was a slight improvement on the match to Hard to Kill, and they were both very good matches. But yeah, clearly there was a view that, you know, for Hammerstone to have another match with Alexander, he sort of had to be the one getting the victory just so the feud can continue. And there was a bit with the head guard afterwards where sort of Hammerstone's claimed it as a trophy. So I think that the feud will further continue and probably have a deciding match, probably at Rebellion.
Yeah, we should probably mention that in this match, there was a ref bump. Hammerstone went to charge into the corner, but Alexander sidestepped, and in part, Alexander hit, or Hammerstone hit the referee. And then Josh Alexander got Hammerstone with the ankle lock. Hammerstone did tap out, but however, the ref is down, so he didn't see it. And then Hammerstone hits a low blow and the Nightmare Pendulum and won the match. And it was very much a, like, before he even did the post-match stuff, you could tell he turned heel with that low blow. He did the cheeky, like, I just turned heel, like, hit the move and then stare into the hard camera with, like, a slight smile thing. Where, like, the very obvious, like, oh, he's heel now. And then hit the Nightmare Pendulum, won the match, and then afterwards attacked Alexander and kind of like choked him with his own head guard, took the head guard with him as like a trophy, like Steve said. So it seems like we are going to get a further feud, as also what Steve said. Casey, do you have any thoughts on this contest?
Yeah, it was a really good match. I'm happy that Hammerstone signed with TNA. I'm pretty much happy that TNA get any wrestlers, with seeing like AEW and TNA, WWE signing like everyone else. Yeah, I'm like really excited to see what the third match of this series would be. Potentially, well, no, most likely not, but like I would like to see some kind of stipulation added to the third match.
Yeah, and it's nice that that's a signing that's not just been released by WWE, which seems to be sort of the pattern in recent signings, but you know, clearly Hammerstone probably had other offers, but I do think TNA is probably the right move for him, because if he'd have gone to an AEW, then he would probably get one match a month on Rampage or Ring of Honor.
Yeah. Hammerstone's a better fit in TNA as well, in my opinion. I think this was the better move in comparison to him going to AEW. I don't think he would. I think, like, if he went to AEW, it wouldn't have been as successful as him coming to TNA. I feel like TNA was the better move for him and his career. But yeah, moving on into the next match. Before this match happened, there was a quick little interview with Time Machine, which is Marseille Machine Guns and Kushida. Little interview about their upcoming match. And it appeared that Alex Shelley is still angry at Kushida for throwing in the towel at No Surrender, which we have actually seen a bit of within the last couple of weeks. There was a tag match for the Time Splitters where, when they made their entrance, Shelley didn't do the little Time Splitter pose on the ramp. He kind of just blew by, and Kushida was like, hey, bro, we're like our pose thing. He's kind of like you could tell he's annoyed, but also like, you know, not like trying to turn heel or anything. He's just kind of like sorry, I'm like focused on the match kind of stuff. But yeah, just a little interview, kind of like further planting seeds for a potential heel turn maybe, or potential breakup between the Time Splitter or their friendship with the Jet Setters and the Mercy Machine Guns. But yeah, the match was Time Machine versus Ali and GYV. This was supposed to be the Good Hands, but the Good Hands lost the previously mentioned tag match that the Time Splitters had their little like argument on the ramp during their entrance. That match was against Good Hands. They beat the Good Hands, which Ali basically said, yeah, after that, I kind of realized that you guys aren't actually as good at this wrestling thing as I thought you were. So you're fired. I have now hired the Grizzly Young Vets to be my corner for Sacrifice. So sorry. So GYV took the spot of the Good Hands, which this I'm much more pleased with. It turned into it being a much better match. But yeah, it was a very good six-man tag. You guys have any thoughts on it?
Yeah, great. I really enjoyed it. It was, you know, when you knew the Grizzly Young Veterans are going to be in alongside Ali, you knew it was going to be a fantastic six-man match. Yeah, it was everything you thought it would be. Just continued teasers of perhaps tension in Time Machine. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing how that furthers in the lead up to Rebellion.
Yeah, definitely. I can see, honestly, like maybe a singles match between Kushida or Shelley, or even a tag match like Machine Guns versus Jet Setters. Casey?
Yeah, it was a really great match. This was like my match of the night. I guess now is like a time to like bring this up. You guys noticed that there's like a lot of groups within TNA. Like, well, first back at Hard to Kill, there was the System forming. Then there was Kevin Knight being paired with the Guns and Kushida. Then there was Macklin with Rascals, Nemeth with Speedball Mountain, Ali with the Good Hands, then now GYV. And then like later, like for some reason, there's the weird relationship of EY and ABC. There's just like everyone like has friends. It's like if I didn't know any better, I would have like assumed TNA were playing to like build like a trios, like introduce trios titles.
Total Nonstop Friendship, the new name of the company. I and maybe it just doesn't bother me just because I'm used to AEW with like factions across the board. So it's kind of like a thing where like I look at this, it's like they're just, yeah, it's friends. Friends are friends. Friends happen. I'm not kind of like as like bothered by like all like the friendships and stuff, just because like, well, there's so much other, it could be worse. It could be like just factions everywhere, like with New Japan or AEW or Stardom or something. Like friends is one thing, factions is another thing. It's kind of just like everyone's pretty cool with each other. All the faces are chill with the faces, and the heels are somewhat chill with the heels. But yeah, any further thoughts on the six-man tag, or are we good to move on to our next one?
Yeah, good to move on.
All right. Our next match saw a three-way for the Knockouts World title as Jordynne Grace defended the title against Tasha Steelz and Xia Brookside. This was due to a bit of a best-of-three series between Steelz and Brookside. The first match happened the show after Hard to Kill, which saw Brookside win, and then they had a rematch a few weeks later, which saw Tasha win, and then I think it was the Impact following No Surrender. Tasha and Brookside had another match to determine the number one contender for the title, which saw a double count out, and that saw Grace come out and be like, hey, I'll fight both of you. And then it became a three-way at Sacrifice. Before the match started, Ash by Elegance, again, she came out and was sitting ringside for this match. I want this to stop. I don't want her, if she either have her compete for the title or Rebellion, or don't have her ringside. This, like, the first match at No Surrender against Giselle, it was not as bad, but oh my god, it was so distracting there in this match. The amount of times they cut away from the match to show Ash sipping on champagne, like, I don't care. I don't care that she is drinking champagne. Like, just focus on the match. Like, about, like, two-thirds of the way through, though, there was a spot that caused Tasha to get sent tumbling into Ash, which caused her to spill her champagne, which somehow caused the match to just come to a screeching halt, where, like, everyone kind of stopped wrestling and was like, oh no, her champagne! And then Ash and her concierge just kind of stormed out, and then the match continued, and it's kind of like, stop, just stop. You don't need, like, no, we don't need this much focus on Ash, especially during a title match. This is dumb. This is a dumb amount of focus on Ash. The match came back after that dumb stuff, and Jordan retained. This match was fine. It got brought down because of the constant showing of Ash, which, again, stop. It was fine. It could have been better. I thought it was going to be better. I feel like Ash just completely ruined it, in all honesty. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I was so pleased they'd done a three-way, because I think if you'd had a one-on-one match, unfortunately, I think it would have been pretty obvious Jordan was winning. At least having a triple threat gave a slight option of, you know, not being involved in the pin and Jordan not actually losing the title, but someone else getting the title. But yeah, Ash by Elegant, this feud just needs to come to a conclusion at Rebellion, I think, and move on.
Yeah, they need to start the feud, is what they need to do, because they haven't started the feud. She's just like,
no,
showed up a couple times, and Iceman's been like, look, she's gonna wrestle next week, and then she does a squash match, and then she sits ringside for a title match, and then she goes away again, and it's like, hi, do something.
I mean, I sat in a crowd at wrestling match, so I don't get a title shot just for watching a match.
Yeah, I'm fearing that TNA is setting up Ash for failure. Because for what it seems so far, it very much looks like if the match is happening at Rebellion, that will be like Ash's first like real match since like leaving WWE. And there's a lot of people that think Ash just like is underrated and was never given a proper chance to show like how great of a wrestler she is. And she's about to like have that platform to really showcase what she can do, but it very much could like say like the fans online, it might like prove like the fans online were really right, whereas like she was never really that good. And like I hope like TNA can like work around this,
because the problem is that in that match she's either got to win the title, which makes Jordan Grace look weak, or she's going to lose her first main match.
Yeah. Like, everything about this does not look good for Ash. It's like, maybe, hopefully, they don't have her go straight for the title at Rebellion. But, like, I don't really see where else they can go for the Knockouts World title at Rebellion. So, I guess we'll see.
Yeah. I don't know. It's the thing where it's like, like, are you going to do something with her? Are you not going to do something with her? And if you're going to do something with her, can it not be for the world title? Thank you. Like, I don't know. She doesn't need to be champion. She doesn't need to be in a feud even with Jordan Grace yet. Like, there's so many more interesting matches you could do for Rebellion. If you're going to give Ash a title match, give it to her on, like, one of the smaller shows. Like, Under Siege, for example. Don't do one of the big four. The big four should be for the big, like, bigger matches. This is not a bigger match. But, yeah, I think it's safe to say that we can head on over to our main event of the night, which saw Moose defending the TNA World Championship against EY, Eric Young. This was what I kind of expected, which was just a fine match. Like, it was in Canada, this show happened in Windsor, Ontario. So home court advantage for Eric Young with it. Crowd is behind him because, of course, he is a Canadian boy. Pretty good spots between the two of them. Pile driver on the apron from Eric Young, which was a very good spot. But he did a pile driver on the apron and then followed up with a pile driver on the floor. Poor Moose's noggin. And then right after that, Eddie Edwards and Brian Myers came to ringside to cause some interference. Eric Young took them out with a dive. And then he hit Moose with Canadian Destroyer. He went for the pin. Looks like he's going to become the world champion. And the system pulled the ref out of the ring. Ref ejected both of them. And EY stood outside of the ring, basically like telling them to leave while the ref was telling them to leave. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, someone jumped the barricade in a TNA hoodie and mask and choked Eric with the camera cable. And then the person who attacked Eric Young revealed to be Frankie Kazarian. Wait a minute, Frankie, you're suspended. You're not supposed to be here. Choked him out, put him back in the ring. Moose speared him. 1, 2, 3. Moose retains.
I think they said the suspension was up the day beforehand, and it's like, that's a strange thing to mention.
Sorry, what?
I think they said on the commentary that his suspension was actually up the day beforehand, and therefore he was not suspended anymore. And but
I
surely,
missed that.
If you're going to have the storyline bit of him interfering and causing him to lose a title match, it's better to have him not being allowed there rather than, well, actually, he was allowed there. So why was he not backstage and just?
I had actually missed commentary saying that. I wasn't aware that his suspension, or his suspension, I put in air quotes, was up at that point. I thought he was still like suspended indefinitely. Anyway, Eric Young looked stupid in that finish because I don't know why. Ref got pulled out of the ring, and then Eric Young got out of the ring, and then the ref was like, "Hey, should I throw them out?" And Eric was like, "Yeah, throw them out." And the ref was like, "You out here." Like, why did the referee ask for Eric's opinion on if he should throw out the system?
They just let them continue to interfere, and I don't mind.
Like, throwing them out's fine, but, like, why is the referee... Like, the referee's asking Eric, is like, hey, what do you think I should do here? It's like, dude, you're your own man. You're the ref. You're the one in charge of the match. You can do whatever you want to do. Throw the guys out. And then Frankie just stood there watching them get thrown out, which, like, he didn't have to do at all. And then that's what caused him to get choked out. By Kazarian with the camera cables. Yeah, it was a fine match. I thought the finish was a little bit dumber than it should have been. Any further thoughts on this one?
No, again, I mean, it was a match that you went into thinking there's no way Moose is going to lose this. So, yeah. You know, the sort of had that sort of hanging over it, even though it was in Windsor. You just thought this is going to be a good match, but it's not really going to lead to anything.
Yeah, for sure. Casey, you got anything?
Nothing more, really. I guess I'm like curious to see how the EY Kazarian feud is gonna like continue. But like other than that, nothing more. It was a fine main event.
Yeah. And yeah, that's a quick review of Sacrifice and No Surrender. We're kind of close to the time here, so really quick, we're just gonna talk about the two matches that have been announced for Rebellion as of this recording, which is Moose versus Nick Nemeth for the TNA World title and The System versus Speedball Mountain for the TNA tag titles. What's the predictions real quick?
Ideally, like both Nemeth and Speedball Mountain winning the titles. But I don't know why, but I feel like Moose will be retaining. But I would really like to see like Speedball Mountain win the tag titles.
Yeah. I agree. I just think the system's not had the titles long enough for them to lose it, so I sort of think that the system will somehow retain both, possibly by one by DQ or something, and the other by interference.
Yeah, both very valid points. System hasn't held the titles for too long, but Speedball Mountain and Nick Nemeth better. So, yeah, I'm kind of like 50-50 with you guys, where it's like the system hasn't held them very long, but also like Nemeth and Speedball Mountain as champions would be dope. But yeah, so really quick though, before we call it here, WrestleMania weekend is coming up. We will be recording our next episode following Mania weekend, so we're just going to take a very quick, or not really take a look, but I'm going to kind of do a quick read off of what the stars of TNA will be up to during that big weekend. Speedball Mania is back again, like it is every Mania weekend. He has a very busy Mania weekend. April 3rd at WrestleJohn, he is wrestling Paul London. April 4th at Defy's Can't Deny It, he is teaming with Mao as Moonlight Express to take on Kid Lykos and Chris Brooks. That one I'm excited for. He's wrestling Nick Nemeth at Bloodsport 10 on the Mark Hitchcock Memorial Super Show. He's wrestling Rob Van Dam. DDT goes Philadelphia. He's facing Yuki Ueno. Joey Janela's Spring Break. He's teaming up with East West Express, which is Nick Wayne and Jordan Oliver, against Ricky Morton, Robert Gibson, and Kerry Morton. Steve Macklin also has some matches going on with that weekend. He will be challenging for the Monster Factory Championship against David Goldie. And he will be taking on Charles Mason in a Philly street fight at the Revolver House of Glory show. Morrissey and Machine Guns will also be in action that weekend. Specifically Alex Shelley, he'll be taking on Santana for the in a kind of not really a title unification match, but like for all the gold kind of situation. House of Glory Championship, Revolver Championship. That's the only singles match actually Shelley has that weekend. Also, but also confirmed for the Revolver show, Revolver House of Glory show, Mustafa Ali will take on Amazing Red, and the Rascals and GYV are scheduled to be on that show. Masha Slamovich also has a busy weekend. She will be part of a one-night, four-woman Bloodsport tournament at Bloodsport X featuring her, Lady Frost, Marina Shafir, and Lindsay Snow. Hello, Future Fusa. So, turns out that Masha actually won't be part of that little inter-show tournament. Turns out that she's actually be wrestling WWE's Shayna Baszler that night at Bloodsport 10 instead. She'll be defending the JCW World Championship against Stardom Shuri. At Joey Janela's Spring Break 8, she'll be in a tag match with Rina Yamashita against Masato Tanaka and Minoru Suzuki. And she is scheduled to appear on GCW versus Tokyo Joshi Pro. That card has not been announced yet, but she has been confirmed for that card. And she has also been confirmed for Battleground Championship Wrestling's Block Party Meet and Greet. And she's also confirmed for WrestleCon Saturday, along with a bunch of other wrestlers. Surely there are names that I've missed, but there's just a lot of wrestling for Mania Weekend. So if you want to go find out what other TNA wrestlers are up to that weekend, you can either check their social medias or you can just Google WrestleMania weekend card and you'll find some full-on schedules and maps from some other great sites.
Hi, Future Fusa again. So really quick, I just want to give a quick shout out to Voices of Wrestling. On their site, they have basically the entire schedule for Mania weekend from the very first day of shows all the way to the very last day of shows with Mania Sunday. If you want to see a more detailed schedule of like all the shows that have been announced, shows that have been canceled, matches that have been announced, wrestlers that have been announced to appear on shows, and a bunch of other things, highly recommend going to their website and checking out that article with all the information.
But that's gonna do it this month, I think, unless any of these other two lovely folk have something to throw out really quick about TNA.
Just one thing to mention was Rich Swann's heel turn. So, you know, as AJ France has been trying to recruit him for several weeks, and sort of in last week's Impact or TNA Impact, it led to Rick Swann helping AJ France getting the win over Joe Hendry.
Oh, cool. I hadn't actually watched that episode of Impact yet. I'm very glad you mentioned it because I was going to skip the AJ Francis match regardless. So you mentioning it is good for me because now I can actually skip the AJ Francis match without feeling
like I missed anything. Sorry for the spoiler, but yeah.
No, it's all good. I actually appreciated the spoiler because now I can just skip the match without being like, oh no, I missed Rich Swann's heel turn. But yeah, I think that's going to do it for this month. If you like what you heard and you want to check out more of the WrestleIn network of podcasts, you can do so by searching WrestleIn wherever you get your podcasts. If you want even more WrestleIn content, you can follow us on Twitter at WrestleIn. And if you want more content from any of the voices you heard today, you can follow me on Twitter at Fusa Balor.
I'm Steve Howard, so at Steve Howard 1972.
I'm Casey at KC underscore Foster 1763.
And if you want to chat along with us, along with other members of the WrestleIn team and community, you can join the Discord via the link on our site at WrestleIn.com. This has been Total Nonstop Talk.
It's been a long one.
I botched it. I was doing so good and I botched it. This has been Total Nonstop Talking, and we will see you next month.